I'd like to call the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee to order. The time is 7 o'clock. It is May 15th, 2019, day 121. And present, we have Senator Stedman, President Giesel, Senator Von Imhoff, Representative Josephson, Vice Chair Bishop, and myself, Representative Tuck. Let the record reflect that we do have a quorum. I also would like to thank Butch Carber from Records and Doug Bridges from the Legislative Information Office. They're here to make sure our meeting runs smooth. The first order of business is the approval of minutes, and I also want to recognize that we have Senator Begich in the audience. Vice Chair Bishop.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. I move that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee approve the minutes of the May 10th, 2019 meeting as presented.
Hearing no objection. The minutes from May 10th, 2019 meeting are approved. I just want to go over the agenda just real quick. We're going to change things up a little bit. We're going to first take up the Legislative Audit Storage Area Network procurement. And then shortly after that, we're going to go ahead and release the statewide single audit for FY18. And then we'll have any discussions of that audit afterwards. Okay, so with that, if Chris Curtis can please join us at the table and talk about the procurement for the legislative audit.
For the record, my name is Chris Curtis, State Legislative Auditor. I believe you have all got a memo explaining the need for a storage area network. This, we call it a SAN. This was already purchased within my own procurement authority. It was $34,000. We purchased it in April. It doesn't work. We're working with the company to fix it. If in the event it's not fixed, we're going to have to return it and get a refund. And the next lowest bid is approximately $40,000 for a new one, which is more than my procurement authority. So in the event we can't fix it, I'm asking for authority to purchase the next lowest amount, which is approximately $40,000. I'm asking for approval of $45,000, which was in your memo. I actually can lower that now to $41,000. We did get a bid last evening, so it can be the motion could be lowered to $41,000.
Any questions from committee members? Any comments? Anyone okay? Everyone okay with the $41,000? We'll make the motion. Vice Chair Bishop.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the Legislative Budget and Audit Committee authorize the Legislative Auditor to procure a storage area network at a cost not to exceed $41,000.
Okay. Hearing no objection, the procurement has been authorized. The next order of business is going over the single audit. Ms. Curtis, if you want to just give us any highlight overviews, if you'd like, before we...
Chair Tuck, do you want me to go through the individual, my detailed talking points at this point?
No, just if you don't mind, just to highlight some of the big issues. Things that we should be probably focusing on as the committee more than anything.
Well, The single audit is an annual project. It's the requirement of receiving federal financial assistance. So something we have to do every year is a condition of federal funding. There is two main objectives to this report. First, to determine whether the state's financial statements are fairly presented. And secondly, to determine whether state agencies are complying with the various federal laws and regulations in the administration of its federal programs. So that's its two main objectives. It's a very large document. If you have the white copy of the document, the sections are split out into the yellow cardstock, helps you move around in the document. There's four main sections. The first section, and they're identified by Roman numerals at the bottom of the page. First section, Roman numeral one, is the state's financial statements, the notes to the financial statements, and our opinion on the financial statements. The opinion units all were unmodified, meaning that we believe there's free from material misstatement, except for the general fund. We do have a qualified opinion on the general fund, which I will go through.
Okay.
I don't know. I can.
Let's go ahead and adopt it first.
Okay.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. So I would like to entertain the idea of adopting the release of the single audit.
Vice Chair.
I move and ask unanimous consent that the State of Alaska single audit for the fiscal year ended June 30, 2018 be released as a final public report.
Okay, seeing no objections, I'd like to add that we have Representative Sponholz has joined us. Seeing no objection, that motion has passed. Okay, please continue, Ms. Curtis.
Okay, then the second main section is Roman numeral 2 at the bottom of the page. This is all of the findings and recommendations to the state departments. The third section, Roman numeral 3, is our auditor's report on federal compliance, on internal controls over financial reporting, on internal controls over federal compliance. And also in section 3 is the state's schedule of federal awards. If you turn to 3-11, is the beginning of what we call the CFA, the schedule of federal awards. This shows all of the federal financial assistance that the state received in FY18. It totals just around $4.3 billion for FY18. If anyone is interested in that information by State Department, it is an appendix at the back of the audit. And then section 4 is all of the department's corrective action plans in response to the findings. And we do have, we also handed out the hard copy matrix of the findings. We have an electronic version of that. That's right there. It is sortable. You can drill down to all the details. You can sort it by department, by type of finding, to help you really dig down into those findings. So if I'd like you to turn to page 2, Roman numeral 2-3. This is a summary of the findings we have at the beginning of section 2. This summarizes the findings between financial, federal compliance, and state compliance. It breaks out the findings, internal control findings, between material weaknesses and significant deficiencies. In total, we had 74 findings in FY18. And to provide that perspective, in FY15, we had 44 findings, and that year we considered a high year. So most of the increase is in the area of federal financial reporting. So it's really blown up in the area of financial reporting. 27 financial recs in FY18. I'm going to focus my discussion today on the financial recommendations and keep my comments more high level for the federal compliance recommendations. This audit is done in accordance with federal rules on what we have to report. And so the federal findings are less informative for, I think, this body. So I'm going to focus on the financial findings. So 2-23, you can see the there's four material weaknesses and internal controls over financial reporting. And that, if you turn the next page, it covers both pages. And there's 23 significant deficiencies over the internal controls over financial reporting. You can see from the matrix that most of those are in the Department of Administration and the Department of Transportation. I'm not going to go through each of these individually. I'm going to just focus on those financial findings that we believe were impacted the audit timeline. They were very time-consuming, or they were very material, or they resulted in a qualified opinion on the financial statements. So first, Department of Administration, if you turn to page 2-10, there's 11 financial recs in Department of Administration. I'm going to highlight four of them. First is finding number one on Roman numeral 2-10. This is the Constitutional Budget Reserve. This finding we also had in FY16 and FY17. Essentially, the Division of Finance made numerous errors in calculating the draw from the CBR to the general fund. The error ended up misstating the draw by over $300 million. These errors were basically caused by a lack of adequate procedures. 2-14, this is a finding over revenues, reporting revenues in accordance with generally accepted accounting principles, which requires them to be reported by classification. Since this new accounting system went into effect, Division of Finance has struggled to report revenues in accordance with GAAP. Very time-consuming in fixing these problems. In total, the errors were just over $110 million. And when I talk about these errors, they were corrected via audit adjustments. Capital assets, 2-15. This addresses that capital assets, identifying and correcting capital asset errors, very time-consuming. We had similar errors in 16 and FY17. The errors were compounded in FY18 because state agencies began inputting the capital asset information into the state's accounting system. Prior to FY18, capital assets were tracked via manual spreadsheets, and depreciation was calculated via manual spreadsheets. The problem happens when they inputted the information into the state accounting system. No reconciliation was done to ensure that all the information on the legacy spreadsheets got into the state's accounting system accurately, and it did not get input accurately. Additionally, there was lots of problems with the footnote disclosures. So very time consuming to correct. You can see on the bottom of 2-16, the total amount of the errors are listed out. You can see the materiality of them. And Chair Tuck, if I can direct my staff to make sure Senator Begich gets a copy.
Sure, please.
Can you get Senator Begich? Oh, you do, okay. And then moving on to late OPEB.
Senator Begich, if you want to join us up at the table, you're more than welcome to.
Late OPEB schedules. OPEB stands for Other Post-Employment Benefits, OPEB. Roman numeral 2-20, this discusses the Division of Retirement and Benefits, finding 11 on 2-20. Division of Retirement and Benefits, failure to issue audited schedules of employer and non-employer OPEB allocations for the public employees retirement system and the teachers retirement system. During FY18, the state implemented GASB Statement Number 75 that requires specific OPEB information be reported in the pension plans themselves and the plan participants' financial statements. The OPEB information must first be compiled into allocation schedules. They must be audited by the plan's auditor, which is KPMG. Once audited, then the OPEB information is available to disseminate to all the plan participants. This did not happen timely, and delayed issuance of the OPEB allocation schedules resulted in the delayed issuance of audited financial statements for the pension plans for all the plan participants. That includes your school districts, plenty of local governments, state entities, and the state itself. So a far-reaching impact to that problem. 2-28, if you move to 2-28, we're getting into the Department of Revenue. Revenue had three financial findings. First is 2-28, finding number 15. This is a material weakness in internal controls which led to a qualified opinion on the general fund. Revenues eligible for transfer to the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund were not transferred during FY18, and revenues that should have remained into the CBR were moved to the general fund. This finding has to do with a disagreement regarding whether the FERC, the Federal Energy Regulatory Commission, related tax revenues should be deposited into the Constitutional Budget Reserve Fund. The Attorney General argues that monies belong into the general fund, and our legal analysis concludes that the monies belong into the CBR. If you look under the effect paragraph on 2-29, you can see the amounts specific to the Department of Revenue that we believe are misstatements to the FY18 financial statements. Total understatement in the CBR balance is $1.04 billion. We also note that $34.9 million of FERC-related revenues were offset to tax credits during FY18. Okay, moving on to the Department of Health and Social Services. Most of the Health and Social Services findings are federal compliance related, and I'll address those more at a high level at the end of the presentation. I do want to draw your attention to page 2-62, finding number 37, 2-62. This is Health and Social Services shortfall recommendation. Generally, a shortfall means that an agency did not collect all of the revenues that were budgeted, resulting in overspent general funds. The department has seven potential shortfalls in FY18, the biggest being the Medicaid Management Information System for just over $3.5 million for budget year 2002 and over $200,000 for budget year 2007. The shortfalls were due to the Federal Oversight Agency disallowing the expenditures that were claimed beyond the period of performance. HSNS management asserted that claims were delayed due to litigation with the contractor. Moving on to Military and Veterans Affairs, shortfall finding on page 2-86. This three potential shortfalls, the biggest being around $126,000. According to management, the shortfall was caused by problems recording revenues during the conversion to the new accounting system. Moving on to the Department of Natural Resources, this department has four financial findings, and two of the findings led to qualifications to the opinion. Moving to 2-90, if you turn to 2-90, finding number 53, This finding states that DNR did not transfer to the Alaska Permanent Fund all dedicated mineral lease revenues received during FY18. I did go into detail during the previous meetings. I wasn't planning on going into detail. I'm just going to direct your attention to the effect paragraph on the next page, which is 2-91. It shows that the error is $99.8 million for FY18. Finding number 54 on page 2-92 is DNR's finding related to the FERC related receipts and deposit into the CBR. The effect paragraph on the next page, which is 2-93, shows that DNR related impact for this issue is $287.9 million. The financial statement, financial opinion was qualified due to findings 53 and 54. DNR shortfall finding on page 2-105 is finding number 63. The department has four appropriations in shortfall, the largest being $459,000. Management stated that the shortfall was caused by incorrect recording of cash related to a reimbursable service agreement and not monitoring shortfalls due to staff turnover. Okay, moving on to Department of Transportation and Public Facilities, 2-120, finding number 67. This one explains that the department has continued to struggle recording expenditures during the reappropriation period to the correct fiscal year. We had a similar finding in FY15, FY16, and FY17. The department did implement training and monitoring procedures during FY18, so they did make strides to correct this error. The training and monitoring, however, did not address capital project invoices and did not cover just capital projects in general. So that's where we found the errors this year. So improvement were made in FY18, but still have an area they need to address. So recommendation number 69 on 2-122. This is DOT's capital asset finding. Capital assets are a real big problem with this agency. Errors were caused by a lack of training, a lack of oversight, and ineffective procedures. The effect of the errors are shown in the bottom of 2-123 and on the next page. Auditors did spend months testing capital assets and helping the agency correct the errors. Page 2-127 is finding number 73. This is the department's shortfall finding. Three shortfalls for FY18, the largest approximately $1.5 million. The shortfalls were a result of incorrectly calculating the unexpended and unobligated balance of the appropriations which were carried forward to FY19. DOT management stated that the staff turnover and lack of monitoring procedures contributed to the shortfall. And then the final financial finding that discussed today is 132, page 132. This is finding number 74 for the Alaska Permanent Fund Corporation. This is the corporation not collecting all of the statutorily dedicated revenues during FY18 related to the permanent fund. This is the same issue we just discussed with DNR. Again, the impact is $99.8 million. Okay, so moving on to federal compliance, these comments are more of a high level. If you go back to that Roman numeral 2-3, you'll see the summary of the findings for federal compliance. Federal programs, like I said, we audited as directed by the federal OMB, so they specifically say you have to report any question costs over $25,000, for example. So those findings may not be as material. However, we can say that we did have material noncompliance with four major federal programs. What does material noncompliance mean? It means that from the audit perspective that we have to audit these four programs again next year. It impacts required coverage for an audit. If you have material noncompliance, you're not allowed to be considered a low risk auditee, which means you have to have more audit coverage. If you turn to section 3, go to find that yellow card stock and go to section 3-5 is our opinion on federal compliance. And then if you turn to 3-6, at the bottom of that page, we have to describe the basis for a qualified opinion, and that's where I'm going to start going through. So the first program we had material noncompliance in was with the United States Forest Service Fire Suppression Program. Timesheet testing for this program found a high degree of noncompliance, which resulted in $163,000 of question costs. And question costs simply means that the federal agency reimbursed for costs that don't meet the federal requirements, and they may have to be repaid to the federal government. We also identified incorrect coding of costs, resulting in $45,000 of question costs. The second program with material noncompliance is a similar program. It's fire suppression, but this one is under the Bureau of Land Management. We also had errors with timesheet testing. It resulted in question costs of $111,000. The third program with material noncompliance is with the 1332 State Innovation Waivers Program. Section 1332 refers to that section of the Affordable Care Act, which permits a state to apply for a state innovation waiver to pursue innovation strategies for providing their residents with access to health care or health insurance. Alaska applied for and received a waiver to implement the high-risk pool reinsurance program. It's called the Alaska Reinsurance Program. We did find material noncompliance with this program in the areas of federal procurement, suspension and debarment requirements, and subrecipient monitoring requirements. So it's the Division of Insurance, just probably not used to dealing with these federal requirements, something that we hope can be easily addressed this next year. So we'll be in an FY19 to review this program again. And then the fourth program is material noncompliance. This is the Temporary Assistance for Needy Families, your TANF program. We found material noncompliance with the federal eligibility and specific special income verification requirements. 10% of the 40 applications we tested were not processed within the 30-day requirement, and then 53% of the applications tested lacked documentation supporting that the agency had verified eligibility using the electronic verification systems. Additionally, we did find 8 actual eligibility determination errors. So again, material noncompliance means that the program must be audited in the next year. So this concludes the very fast overview of this very large document, and a lot of more discussion can happen on these findings. That's why I provided the hard copy of the matrix. An electronic version is available if you wanted to drill down and do some more work on these findings. We do, again, 74 of the findings. This was late. The feds require this be submitted by March 31st. It was late for 3 main reasons. First, it was late because the state's financial audit opinion was issued late, and that has an impact on resources. It's late because there were 74 findings, which have to be first put into a management letter, sent to an agency. They have 10 days to respond. There's a timeline that goes into all of these audit findings. Thirdly, the auditor for the Department of Health and Social Services last year, they had an outside auditor. They found material noncompliance that impacted 6 major federal programs. That means all of those that were considered type A programs had to be audited again this year, which required an additional audit effort that delayed the timeline. Are there questions on this quick overview of this very large document?
Senator Von Imhoff.
Thank you, Chair Tuck, and thank you, Chris Curtis, for that wonderful overview. So, in your opinion, are you seeing over the course of a couple years, this is my third time doing this now, patterns, repeats, et cetera? And the reason why I ask this is that I'm seeing them. And it's one thing to be able to identify audit issues in your audit, and thank you, it's very thorough. But in my experience, the next and more important step is to plan for improvement. So we're seeing some new things, a higher number. What has been your experience, or I guess what is the next step with this committee when starting to meet with the different departments and saying we've seen this for 2, 3, or more years? What's the plan? what are the specific steps that you want to take so we don't have that many TANF violations in the six different, just in HESS alone, the six different federal programs. I mean, that's alarming. So I guess I don't know if Chris can answer this or if Chris or Chris, what's the next step in the departments addressing each of these findings?
Thank you, Senator Von Imhoff. Do you have any suggestions, Ms. Curtis?
Chair Tech and committee members, really with the implementation of the new accounting system, everything, all historical ideas or how things progress were just thrown out the window because we're just entering a new age with the new accounting system. Been auditing, 25 years, and the first 20 years were on the legacy system. You saw patterns. You also, during my first 20 years the state, you saw a lot of stability in the personnel. That is totally changed. We're seeing 50% turnover, Division of Finance. These are the people responsible for creating your financial statements. That is extremely detrimental. You're seeing high level of turnover in agencies. These are your program people. You're having to constantly recruit and train. And it's really, we're seeing the impact on the audit side with the high level of findings. We've talked amongst ourselves, like it's so hard. When we used to audit, we'd go and we'd find things periodically. Now every time we turn over a rock, we find a lot more things because we believe it's because of the turnover at the agency and the new accounting system. And that's just, the new accounting system, we believe they're, things are starting to settle out. They're starting to get those new processes documented. They're starting to be able to handle the change. But with the federal and the federal program side, we're just seeing so many more errors than we used to. So we, as part of this audit, there's a summary of prior audit findings. I didn't discuss that. We call it the SPAF. It goes through all the prior audit findings. So there is a mechanism within this audit to see whether they've corrected things in the past, which is really nice. We are seeing, especially with the new administration, we are seeing more attention to audit findings. And actually with this new administration, initially we're seeing an attention to correcting problems and getting them fixed. So it'll be interesting to see next year whether we see that continue. But as far as this committee, and I have heard discussion over the years, should we bring up departments to ask them their current status? That can certainly be done efficiently during the subcommittee process, finance subcommittee process during the year. We've had some success on the House side doing that over the years. During the interim, you could have departments come and report. The problem comes in with the timing because we're doing this type of work now, even if it's issued final at the end of March, usually you're through the finance subcommittee process, and you can't discuss what's in this audit until it's a public document. So even if we know there's problems during the last year, you're kind of stuck with not being able to address it. But during the interim, you certainly could do some work and asking for status of findings.
Thank you, Ms. Curtis. Vice Chair Bishop.
My question was along the same lines as Senator Von Imhoff and the corrective actions, but I'm just worried. I'm not worried. I'm just concerned. It looks like we're leaving cash on the table, maybe in the HESS department. And in this day and age, we need to, we need to be more prudent and capture that cash. That's all. I mean, we're fighting over pennies in the capital budget, and I'm looking here at several million dollars. At least it appears we've left on the table that. We didn't have to leave them. Could make life easier getting out of town right now.
Well, I think those are very good suggestions. I think the one that we need to take heart most is probably making sure our budget subcommittee chairs are aware of each one of their departments and the deficiencies, at least for what we've been able to release through the audits, so they can be holding the departments accountable when they present their budgets to the. And maybe we can assist, maybe we can help, maybe there's things that we need to change. maybe even introduce statutes if we have to try to make sure that we're working in the right direction. Any other additional comments? Any additional questions? Thank you very much, Ms. Curtis. I appreciate it. I think that's the last of what we have on the agenda. I want to thank everybody for being here early this morning. I know we've been having a lot of early meetings, so I want to thank everybody for participation and attendance. And is there any other business to come before the committee? Seeing no other business before the committee, we will be adjourned at 7:31. Thank you very much.